Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is author of the Milwaukee Independent, one of the authors of the Milwaukee Independent, and also founder of Nurturing Diversity Partners, Mr. Reggie Jackson. And you know, Reggie, I want to say this quickly before we go back. This is an article this morning, and it talks about the fact that there are people who are upset and angry because a gentleman who founded the Brownstone Institute, and he's upset that a recent tour of Thomas Jefferson's historic Monticello estate was too woke. And as you probably guess, he does. Yes, he does look like this. Tucker tells Kilmeade that his July 4th tour of the historic site was depressing and demoralizing and truly upsetting. Why? Well, he doesn't go into exact details, but he does say that the tour guides focus on debunking his history, his reputation, putting him down, demoralizing everybody on my tour. That's an interesting choice of words, of course, because to say that the tour was debunking Jefferson's history implies that there was some sort of misconception or gap in knowledge needing to be debunked. Imagine that. Kilmeade asked the obvious assumption that what Tucker is alluding to is Jefferson's history as a slave owner. He is dismayed that this incredibly important fact might be brought up during a tour of the estate because, as he notes, there's a tour, multiple tours, actually dedicated to exploring the perspective of enslaved people. Now Kilmeade says on the main tour, all you hear about is slavery, and you don't even hear about Jefferson at all. The guides do not talk about the incredible man, a thing that is mostly definitely not true. Now, what person, I don't care what color you are, you know, that knows a modicum about the history, would say that you shouldn't be talking about slavery. And, you know, when we know at the root of most of that, that's what it was. And it doesn't matter whether they were a founding father or who it was, to the people who you enslaved. You know, we talk about morality and all those things. We know slavery was immoral. It doesn't matter who the slave owner was. You don't do away with the fact that it's immoral that you would enslave other people and then run around and call your nation the moral compass of the world. Come on, Reggie. Come on, man.
Earl, it's fascinating to me how people are speaking about the founding fathers, defending the founding fathers, when the founding fathers did not try to defend themselves. Right? They did not think that what they were doing was wrong because they did it, Earl.
I know.
Listen, 12 of the first 16 U.S. presidents were slaveholders. 12 of the first 16, right? They wrote a constitution. They wrote a declaration.
The greatest document, freedom, liberty, the greatest right? document ever written. Yeah, go ahead.
Now, when the Declaration of Independence was written, you know that African people have been enslaved in this country for well over 100 years, 150-some years already at that point, right?
Yes.
We know this. We know that Native Americans have been enslaved in this country. We know that Native Americans have been slaughtered and their land taken when the Declaration of Independence was written about how wonderful this country was going to be. We then had a constitutional convention, and then the Constitution was drawn up. Now, this is one of the interesting things. Now, we know that the founding fathers were cognizant of the fact that they were being hypocrites, Earl. And the proof of that is that they did not put the word slave or slavery in the U.S. Constitution at all. The first time you see the word slave isn't until 1865 with the 13th Amendment to the Constitution. So why didn't they put the word slave or slavery in the Constitution? Well, they knew that it would make them look like hypocrites, Earl. But this is the thing, and this just shows you the irony of where we are. Now, they use words like other persons to describe yeah. our ancestors who were right. slaves, right? Other persons, or persons held to service, right? Those are the terms they use instead of saying slave or slavery, right? But guess what happens? In 1861, a whole new country is developed. It's called the Confederate States of America, right, Earl? They wrote the Constitution, too. They literally almost copied and pasted the U.S. Constitution almost word for word. And when they would talk about slaves and slavery, they used those words in their Constitution, Earl. I have to give them credit for being honest. They were being honest. The Founding Fathers were being hypocrites. They literally said slave and slavery because they knew they were fighting to support slave and slavery because they knew that that was all they really had. So when you talk about the Founding Fathers and Jefferson and all this, some of this slavery now, well, listen, there's a great book that your audience needs to read, and it's How the Word is Passed, A Reckoning with the History of Slavery Across America. This great author, this man, Clint Smith. I met Clint Smith. I was invited to do an interview of him. And talk about the book and his journeys across the country, really across the world to multiple places he went. And he talked about Monticello in the book. And during the interview, he talked about Monticello.
Well, what's the name of his book?
How the Word is Passed.
Okay.
A Reckoning with the History of Slavery in America by Clint Smith. Man, wonderful guy. This guy is just phenomenal. The book is outstanding, Earl.
Okay.
He went to some places you couldn't. This man went to a Confederate cemetery, Earl, when they were having a celebration, and he walked around talking to these white people, asking them what they were celebrating, why they loved the Confederate. I mean, the bravery this man had is unbelievable. But when he went to Monticello, he told the story of some white women who were there, right? They were getting a tour, and when they heard about, you know, Sally Hemings, this young girl that Thomas Jefferson had raped and had children with, and when they heard of all the people that he enslaved, they were shocked. They were shocked. They couldn't believe it. They were just like, oh, my goodness, this is, how come we were never told this before? That's what those white women said. How come we were never told this before? Now, this man that you're talking about, that's what he should have been saying. How come we weren't told this before? Because we know it's the truth. It's documented. Listen, they kept records. When they bought black people, they kept records of it, Earl. All of the records of 150 black people that he sold to get the mortgage to build Monticello, Earl. He literally had to sell 150 black people to get the money to build Monticello. That story is now being told at Monticello because black people are like, wait a minute, man, y'all been lying to us here at Monticello. And we want to hear the truth. So now that people that are going there expecting to hear the happy-go-lucky, wonderful Thomas Jefferson this, and they're facing up to the reality that this man isn't who they've been told he is. And some people can't handle it. But it's the truth, Earl.
So you know,
you think that they would switch that at Monticello if it wasn't true?
You know, Reggie, the part of all of this is that we look today at what is taking place in this country. And we're not talking about, you know, all those, you know, decades ago and a century ago. We're talking about today. And we're talking about the ugliness that has reared its head, the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
All of this that is happening in broad daylight,
mm-hmm.
and we can't seem, and this country doesn't have the stomach to step up and say and challenge that open bigotry and racism and hatred. And that's where I'm at, man. I'm at the fact that we're not talking about back then, we're talking now, and mm-hmm. and people mm-hmm. are aware of it. And it's going to lead to some ugly confrontations because black people aren't going to keep taking it, right? I mean, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, you know, Earl, this is where I knew we would be. So, you know, back after George Floyd was murdered, a lot of people around the world were having protests. They saw how wrong that was. I still haven't watched the video. I couldn't watch this video of this man literally dying.
Right.
You know? But I remember the thing that stood out about it from the reports was that he was basically telling this man that he couldn't breathe, and he was begging for his mama.
Right? Yes, yes.
That cuts people in an emotional way, Earl. People are hearing this man asking for his mama. That touched people, regardless of who they were, people were touched by that. People that would have never imagined being touched. And so what happens is people start to say, well, you know what? Black people have been telling us about this mess for years. Now I believe it.
Now it's on tape.
The evidence. Now I get it. Now, right, the evidence is clear. Now
right.
You start looking back on some of the other cases. Eric Garner being choked to death. They say, yeah, that wasn't right. Tamir Rice being shot 2 or 3 seconds after police arrived when he's holding a plastic gun. That's not right. And so they start all of this stuff about, you know, being truthful about police. And then say, well, you know what? There's a lot of other stuff we've been lied to about, too. So people were woke, Earl. They were awakened. But as I said, just because you get up, just because you wake up in the morning don't mean you will get out of the bed and do something. You may just go back to sleep. You may just lay in your bed and not do anything. And that's what America has done, because guess what? The pressure of having a nation, that Earl, that since 1776 has been lying to everybody that lives in this country about its history. Now all of a sudden you have to tell the truth. That's not an easy thing to do.
You know, Reggie, and then you see a man that just got shot 60 times by law enforcement. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we keep seeing the same thing happening over and over and over and over. And you can't be silent on that, America, right? I mean, you can't be silent on that. And then turn around and talk about what those people are doing in their communities and their neighborhoods. You follow me, Reggie? Listen, we got to go to break. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuning into the Earl Ingram Show. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Mr. Reggie Jackson. He's a co-founder of Nurturing Diversity Partners and one of the authors for the Milwaukee Independent. And Reggie, and the reason that we are having this conversation is, when you look in our cities and you look at the waste in our cities, in our communities, and the pain and all the carnage that goes on in these cities, urban centers across this nation, and there seems to be disdain for those people who are criminals, labeled criminals, malcontents, don't want to work, you know, can't read, can't write. You just keep hearing these things over and over and over. And then when you know what has produced that, what has created that, and that it's been organized and it's been sinister and a plot as long as this nation has been, you know, a nation. After a while, you start looking at kids who don't have a snowball's chance in hell to make it, and then you hear people saying, well, we've got to be concerned. Aren't you concerned about what's happening in Ukraine? And I'm saying, man, what are you talking about? Right here in our backyard, people are starving, right? Right here in our backyard, people are struggling, getting up, going to work every day, working for slave wages. being taken advantage of by the banking systems, by law enforcement, right? I mean, all of those things are happening in this country, and we don't hear people crying crocodile tears for what's happening here.
Right. You know, Earl, this is the thing that I say to people a lot, is that we can talk about what's going on in Milwaukee, but if we're going to do it, let's do it honestly. Let's do it in a way where we're literally giving people a context to how Milwaukee got to be what it is today. Now, this is something that you're familiar with, Earl. This is from your generation, the folks that you work with, the folks that your dad worked with back in 1970 in Milwaukee. Blacks had the seventh highest median family income in the country. Median family income that was equivalent to about $50,000 in today's money. Today, that median family income for a black family in Milwaukee is $27,000. So you're going from $50,000 to $27,000. What do you think happens when you chop nearly half of somebody's money off, right? Life ain't going to be the same for those individuals, and certainly not for that community. Our poverty rate was 22% below the national average for blacks. And now it's nearly 40% above the national average for blacks. Now, what changed, Earl? What changed?
Opportunities, man.
2022.
Opportunities.
The good jobs, those jobs that yes. your dad had, working in these manufacturing facilities, making good wages, being able to afford to live the so-called American dream. But when those jobs went away, this is what happened that people don't know. It impacted everybody in Milwaukee, because white people worked in those places, Hispanics, a little bit of everybody, right?
Yes.
But black people had the highest rate of working in those manufacturing jobs of any group in the city. Literally 42% of black people, men and women included, worked in those manufacturing facilities. 53% of black men, Earl, worked in those manufacturing facilities. You want to guess what the percentage was for white people working in those facilities overall?
What?
15% of whites.
Really?
For Milwaukee, depending on those jobs. Just 15%. There was plenty of other jobs for white
yeah.
people.
Yeah,
there was
true.
A lot of jobs, but they had other opportunities. But for us, those were the good jobs. Those are the jobs that brought people from Mississippi and Georgia and Arkansas yeah. and Tennessee up to Milwaukee. That was, listen, they didn't come to Milwaukee because it's a great city on the Great Lakes. They came because it was good jobs, right?
Yeah.
Black population grew because of the good jobs, right? You went from having less than 9,000 people in Milwaukee in 1940. By 1950, it was 21,000. 62,000 by 1960. 105,000 by 1970, Earl. That growth was the fastest growth of any city in the United States of America because of the good jobs. So what happens when those good jobs go away? Let's not talk about Milwaukee. Let's talk about some little town in northern Wisconsin that has a big complex where they're making paper, right? And they go out of business. What happens to that community, Earl?
Well, it's like the body. When the body dies and the spirit leaves, and what's left is the remains. That's what's happening. That's what Milwaukee is. That's what those places up north are. The heart of those communities was that manufacturing plant.
Mm-hmm.
Businesses leave, people leave, right?
Right.
And there's only a shell left.
Exactly. And so here we are looking at the shell in Milwaukee. And what does that tell us about the current conditions of Milwaukee? It tells us that those jobs that brought us here, those jobs that help support and keep our community as a nice community to live in, a safe community to live in, it's not the same anymore. So we hear about all of these people that people say, these people are crazy, the way they're shooting, the way they're driving. They're not crazy. It's not craziness, Earl. It's something wrong with the way they see themselves. They don't value themselves, Earl. They don't value themselves enough to look at somebody that looks just like them and to take their life over something silly. They don't see any value in themselves. I tell people this all the time. To take a person's life, to murder somebody face-to-face, that's not easy to do, Earl. To shoot somebody, I don't care what anybody thinks. You pulling out a gun, an assault rifle, or a 9mm, whatever, and taking somebody's life, that is not easy to do. It takes something fractured inside of you as an individual.
Well,
to do that.
Well, that's absolutely
as
correct.
Nation, Earl,
You know, when you don't Reggie, when you don't value your own life, you're certainly not going to value anybody else's.
This is the example, Earl. Earl, I want to just share this real quick. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, go ahead, man. Reggie, hold the thought. Reggie, hold the thought. We've got to go to a break. We'll be right back. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Reggie Jackson is my guest. We'll be right back. Show as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that number. My guest is Reggie Jackson. And you know, Reggie, before we go back, I just want to say to those in the listening audience, this is not directed at every white person. It is absolutely not. Far too many white people and good white people that I know and that are in this world and know that there's some things that aren't right and stand up and fight. But there's also a segment that is pushing and trying to force those who know what's right into silence. And that's what we're talking about. So, Reggie, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, that's absolutely true, Earl. And I say this as I've traveled around the state of Wisconsin, as I've traveled, you know, to some other states and engaged in these conversations for white people, I always say, listen, one of the things that you have to hold back from doing is when you think of somebody saying white people that they're talking directly about you, don't take it personal. When we're talking about this, we're speaking specifically about the group of people that founded this country. Where we know they were white people, right? We know all the founding fathers were white. That doesn't mean that that's a reflection on you somehow negatively. What we're saying when we talk about the history, and even what we were talking about recently, Earl, the point I was going to make about, you know, the killings that are occurring, the massive number of murders that are occurring, record numbers of murders 2 years in a row in Milwaukee, record numbers of murders around the country in city after city. And we don't like to talk about the fact that a majority of those murders are with guns, Earl, right?
Yes.
People are buying guns since the pandemic hit. The number of guns sold went up exponentially. And this is one of the things that people probably haven't heard. In the years of the pandemic, the number of guns bought by people in the black community went up even faster than it went up in the white community. And do you know why it went up faster in the black community than the white community, Earl?
No, I don't, man.
Because I can tell you why it went up faster. Because black people are like, listen, man, we know there's some stuff going on, and we know that these people are talking about killing us.
Yes.
We're going to buy guns to protect ourselves. It was a defensive move by people in the black community. They looked at what was happening, and then they saw what happened on January 6th. All saw what happened in Buffalo with these people massacred in Buffalo. We remember what happened at Mother Emanuel Church back in 2015. And black people are like, wait a minute, we can't stand around and just be victims. We got to protect ourselves. If they have guns, we need guns. So black people started buying guns to protect themselves. And then when the murder rate started increasing, there was even more reason for people like, I got to protect myself, right? But this is the thing about it, though. And I say this, and I've been saying this for most of my adult life. When you talk about violence, America is built on violence, Earl. America promotes violence, Earl. America loves violence, Earl. Can you think of how many movies you saw and TV shows you saw as a kid where people were killing each other. Remember the old gangster movie?
Hey, man.
The Al Capone and all
the cowboy movies? Yes.
Cowboy movies. Remember watching The Untouchables?
Yes.
You know, when they mowing a bunch of people down in the alley?
Yes.
America loves that stuff. I wrote about, you know, the reaction to Will Smith, you know,
slapping Chris
Rock.
Right.
And I said, you would have thought that he pulled out an Uzi and killed the audience at the awards for him, right?
They made it a big deal, man.
They made it a big deal out of a slap, Earl. But you go back and you look, and I went back and I looked at the history of movies that have won Academy Awards that have been, like, ultra-violent. Two of the most celebrated movies in American history, Godfather and Godfather Part II. It was nothing but murder after murder after murder. Goodfellas. Murder after murder after murder.
I'm guilty.
They love promoting white people that are killing other white people. They love it, Earl. This is what Hollywood does all the time. You have white people who become famous by being criminals. Serial killers, Jeffrey Dahmer, Ted Bundy, they kill people, right? They become famous, Earl. Can you name a black person, a single black person, who became famous as a result of committing a crime? Can you name one?
No, man.
Don't say OJ. That's what people always say. I'm like, no, OJ was already famous. He's already famous. White people kill multiple people and become famous. Dylann Roof became famous
Luke Rittenhouse.
In South Carolina.
Luke Rittenhouse.
Became famous for killing those people in Kenosha.
Right.
He's the toast of the town in conservative circles.
Right.
Black people don't get the same benefit of the doubt. So when we talk about, you know, the murder of black people by police officers, I tell this to people, listen, the argument is that police officers are not hired to shoot and kill unarmed people. They're hired to protect us from dangerous people. So when you see this brother, Jalen Walker, they get shot 60 times. And Earl, I tried not to watch these videos, but I wanted to watch the video because this is what they said. They said after they claimed that he fired
took one shot. A shot. Yeah, one shot.
Oh, Earl, think about this. Come on. You're driving away from the police, right? You're going to pull out a gun. You're going to fire one shot.
Yeah.
And it's two or three police cars behind you. That don't even make sense. But let's just say he did. Let's assume he did, right? Now, when this man finally pulls over, he jumps out of the passenger side of the car. I'm watching the video, right? He jumps out, and now they claim that before they started shooting him, Earl, they tried to use a taser on him. So I said, okay, let me watch the video and see if I can see them trying to use a taser. And I looked at the video, Earl. From the time he jumped out of the car till the time they started firing their weapons, you know how much time elapsed?
No.
10 seconds, Earl. 10 seconds. 10 seconds. Tell me how you had an opportunity to try to use your taser, and, oh, it didn't work, and then we had to start firing our weapons. How is it possible that you had a chance to try to use your taser and find out it didn't work, and then you start killing this man? You shoot 90 bullets at him. In 10 seconds, Earl, by the time he jumped out to the time the first bullets were flying in his direction, I can't believe that you tried to use the taser. Earl, think about this. If you fire a taser at somebody, you got to wait to see if it's working, right? It's going to take you a little bit of time to see if it works.
Right.
It's not going to be 10 seconds of waiting time. It's going to be significant, right? But somehow, oh, well, we tried and it didn't work, and then we have to use our service revolvers. In 10 seconds, Earl? And you wonder why black people are distrustful of the police. And people say, well, why did he jump out of the car? Why did he run? Because he was scared for his life.
Well, there's also, he had a gun in the car. Well, if you talk about all the people now, as you talked about all the people who have guns, if the criteria is you have a gun in your car, therefore you should get shot 60 times for having a gun in your car, we would have more people who've been shot 60 times because there's that many more people with guns in their cars.
Earl, think about the Highland Park shooter that killed 7 people. Fired over 80 rounds from his assault weapon. They arrested him, and guess what he had in the car, Earl? He had another assault rifle.
Right.
Did they shoot at him? No. This is when you look at the images from somebody, you know, took a video of him being arrested. He's laying on the ground. faith ground, and they arrested him, you know, and they got his arms behind his back with the handcuffs on. Jalen Walker, who they shot over 60 times, at least 60 times, Earl, they handcuffed him.
Yeah, while he was down.
When the medical examiner, when the coroner came to take his body, he's a dead man with handcuffs on. Why are you putting handcuffs on a dead person, Earl? So this argument, though, he had a gun in the car. Well, this guy that killed all these people in Highland Park had a gun in his car. They didn't shoot him. They know that he had literally shot at innocent people at a parade. Did they come up with guns blazing? Shoot first and ask questions later like they did with Jalen Walker? No, they didn't.
See, Reggie, those are the things that make people irate. And you hear people say, well, yeah, but you guys kill each other all the time. They just don't see that that's not a correlation between law enforcement doing that and then some guy in the community who doesn't like another guy and he pulls the trigger. You're not supposed to get it from people who are sworn to uphold the law, right? I mean, that's just the bottom line. Got to go to a break.
This is the thing, Earl.
Reggie, hold the thought. Hold
police
the thought.
Kill over.
Reggie, hold the thought. All right, got to get back. Reggie Jackson's on the line. 844-967-2789. We'll be back. Welcome back to the last few minutes of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us that same number. My guest is Mr. Reggie Jackson. So, Reggie, you were saying what before we went to break?
Yeah, Earl, you know, you just mentioned, you know, we don't expect law enforcement to take people's lives, right? That's really not what they're there for. They're there to protect people. It shouldn't be a part of their lives where they have to pull out their gun and take somebody's life. Now, I've talked to a lot of police officers over the course of a number of years, and many of them tell me that they've never fired their
gun. Yeah, I know. I know many of them their whole career in Milwaukee.
Exactly. It's not normal for them to pull out their gun and fire it, right? But nationwide, Earl, over 1,000 people every year are killed by the police. Over 1,000 people every year. So when we think about the ones that we hear about, you know, the ones that end up being national news, that's just a drop in the bucket, Earl. There is no reason that, first of all, we don't have a national database of police killings, right? There's no government agency at the state level, federal level, local level that requires police to report when they kill people and keep track of it and have, you know, data associated with it in terms of circumstances. So back in 2015, the Washington Post started to track police shootings. But you know where they got the information from, Earl? They didn't get it from the police departments. They literally had to scour newspapers around the country to see if there was a story in the newspaper about a police killing. So we all know this, Earl. Come on. We all know this, that there are a lot of newspapers, small-town newspapers. They're never going to report that. They're not going to report it because, you know, the blue lives matter, right?
Yes.
They want to promote the police, and they want to support the police. And just to show that this white police officer, black police officer, whoever he is, shot and killed some unarmed person, that's problematic. That goes against the narrative of the police being the good guys all the time, right? But this is the other part of it, Earl. people will say, well, you know, black people are killed by the police, you know, but it's way more white people killed by the police than it is black people. Of course it is. It's way more white people.
Right.
But when you look at it from proportionality, black people are killed at almost three times the rate of white people by the police. Unarmed black people are killed at five times the rate of unarmed white people by the police. So we look at this brother, Jaylen Walker, that was shot and killed by the police, and we look back at George Floyd. Have you seen any viral videos of white people being killed by the police, Earl?
No, man.
Have you seen it?
No.
And this is a question that some of those conservatives ask. You know, why is it such a big deal they're showing these videos of black people being killed? Well, what about white people that are killed? Because there are no viral videos of white people being killed by the police, Earl. That's the difference. All of the videos that we've seen have been of black and you know, a few Hispanic individuals. But the point of this, the point I'm trying to make is that there's something wrong with policing when the police are killing 1,000 people a year in this country. 1,000 people a year, that's unfathomable. And, you know, people will say, well, yes, it's a dangerous job. And, more police officers over the last 3 years, like way more, have died from COVID than have died from being shot in the line of duty. It's not even close. So when we talk about how dangerous the job is, it's dangerous because police officers around the country have made the decision that they're not going to get vaccinated. And they're putting their lives on the line by not getting vaccinated and dying from COVID at a much higher rate than they are from being shot. People think that police are shot and killed all the time, and it's always tragic when a police officer loses his life in the line of duty. It's always tragic because these people are risking their lives. They're doing a service to our community. But by the same token, Earl, as dangerous as their job is, somehow it's dangerous to be a black person, be in contact with the police. And black people, we know this, Earl, because we had these conversations with each other, right? We know how deathly afraid we are when the police pull up behind us. Our heart rate increases. We start to sweat. We start thinking a million different thoughts about how am I going to handle this. White people don't do that. They reach for their wallet to get their ID and their registration, their insurance. They just reach for it casually. Black people ain't trying to reach for nothing. I had a police officer tell me this when he pulled me over. He said, sir, this is what I need you to know. Do not reach for anything until I ask you to show me something. When I ask you to show me your registration, you can reach for it. Don't reach for it before then. I'm like, well, thank you, officer. I appreciate that. Do I have your permission to reach for my registration? Yes, you do, sir. These are things we have to do, Earl. White people ain't got to sit around thinking about this because they have interactions with the police officers. And by the way, 55% of all Milwaukee City police officers don't live in the city of Milwaukee anymore. 55%. The police officer's their next door neighbor, Earl, is their bowling buddy. He's the guy that coaches their son's softball team. That's not the case for us.
You know, Reggie, man, we've been going at it for a couple hours. Didn't get one call, even though I know that people are listening. And I don't want us to get out of here again with people believing that this is an assault and attack on white people. That is not what this is. We've said it once before. We want to reiterate that. But we can't be silent when if whites don't want their kids to feel bad, and we see kids in our neighborhoods and in our communities who feel bad because they're black and can't seem to do things because they think being black is still a curse in some way, shape, or form. For us to continue to allow those young black children to live the kind of lives that they live, Reggie, when you and I are adult males who have lived through some things and know some truths, for us to remain silent is just like the people who don't want their kids to feel bad. You think we want our kids to feel bad? They think they're nothing because they live in a society that basically says they're nothing. And so we have a responsibility Just like people feel they have a responsibility when they're talking to their children, you and I have a responsibility to talk to ours. And our children cannot be given untruths anymore. The society feeds them that. What kind of people would you and I be, Reggie, if we continue to feed them those same untruths?
We would be the men that we are.
Right.
We would not be the responsible adult black males in our community that are doing the right thing. We certainly wouldn't. We wouldn't fit in that category anymore. And we would be the type of people that are disrespectful to their ancestors if we didn't tell the truth.
Right.
I tell people this all the time. The stories that I share about American history, when I'm talking about slavery, I'm talking about my family members that were enslaved by a man named Dempsey Dilson, Mississippi. I've walked on the land where my family was enslaved, Earl. I have soil from the ground where my family was enslaved, Earl. I've seen the last will and testament of the woman that owned my family giving my family members away. I'm telling their stories, Earl. We're sharing the stories that nobody else is willing to share because it is incumbent upon us as Americans to realize that, listen, lies will only take you so far. And we're at a point in America right now, Earl, where we're beginning to realize that, man, we told so many lies, but now how do we deal with the fact that people aren't believing those lies? People from other countries are looking at the United States and saying, wait a minute, what's wrong with y'all? What is wrong with your country that y'all can't even tell the truth about y'all history? And want to tell the world that you are the moral force of the universe.
Yes, I mean that.
But you can't tell the truth about Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, slavery, Jim Crow, segregation, lynchings, current day systemic racism. You can't tell the truth about that. But somehow we're supposed to look up to y'all like you are a big brother that we're supposed to admire. No, people don't admire the U.S. in that way because they know the truth.
You're willing
to talk about it.
You know, Reggie, and the way you talk about it and the way you travel again, and people should know that you go back time and time again to areas that are completely segregated and have these kinds of discussions, and those people ask you back. So this is not hate. None of what we're talking about is hate. This is just facts.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, people want to say that when you tell the truth, and this is what I say, Earl, all the time to people. Like, listen, I'm just giving you the information that is easy to find if you know where to look. And you evaluate it how you choose. But I'm not telling you that you look at Thomas Jefferson and you say he's a bad person. That's your choice. You judge him however you want to judge him. But when I tell you that, yeah, he definitely owned hundreds of black people, that he definitely raped the 14-year-old black girl who became his concubine, that's just factual information. I'm not saying that there's anything bad about him. I'm just telling you this is the truth. And how you evaluate it is based on what you've been led to believe about Thomas Jefferson.
Hey, Reggie, man, thank you, man. Just spectacular conversation as always. We got to do it again. Really appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
All right.
Thank you, man. Love you. All right. Listen, that's Reggie Jackson, and I'll be back on tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.